Chapter 10. Slipping Away. Aviation can be both challenging and spiritually rewarding. Being a pilot is a never-ending learning process. Our dynamic and fluid atmosphere ensures that no particular flight is ever the same. Just like in life, there are always things to learn from our constantly changing circumstances. In the months that followed the trip to Lake Monticello, I shared my new passion more with my family. As before, Jennifer joined me on some fun flights, and when Shannon had the opportunity, I took her up and allowed her to pilot the plane. Shannon's enthusiasm grew, and she even mentioned that she might look into aviation programs at college. Although I like to think of myself as a fairly accomplished small plane pilot now, something still bothers me about riding on jetliners. Jennifer obtained a bargain airfare for a flight in November, and with Shannon off at college, the time has come for the two of us to slip away for a vacation. I am not too thrilled with the idea of a long flight, but recognize I have to face this fear once and for all. I now understand much about aviation and weather, but I still need more to help squelch my anxieties. In the weeks leading up to our vacation, memories of my flight last year still haunt me. Maybe it's still a control issue. Will I behave the same? Will Jennifer see me reduced to a quivering mass of fear? I again turn to the internet for help. There's a great deal of information and advice available online, and this helps me feel better prepared in case a panic attack rears up to assault me on the flight. I put some thought into bringing my favorite reading materials, along with magazines containing calming, scenic photographs. I'm determined to use the time on the plane in an enjoyable way. I even pack some of my favorite games and snacks, thinking I might as well take this opportunity to indulge myself. Before our flight, I make sure to get a good night's sleep, eat a good breakfast, and lay off the sugar or caffeine which might add to the jitters. I plan to leave early for the airport to avoid any additional anxieties. During our drive, Fly Like an Eagle plays on the radio, and I find myself listening intently to the lyrics, despite hearing them many times before. While at the airport's departure lounge, I feel hesitant about getting on the airplane. I recall what Amelia had once told me when she was in one of her philosophical moods. Living your life is like flying a plane. You must keep moving forward or you will drop. And when you encounter turbulence in life, remember that you are strong like an airplane's wing. You can handle the bumps. I find courage in what Amelia had said, and when the airport PA calls our flight, I approach the gate agent. As suggested in my research, I ask the agent if I can meet our pilot before boarding. Jennifer and I board the plane, and she heads back to her seat while I seek out our pilot. Our captain, Pete Grissom, is a confident, distinguished-looking gentleman. I explain to him my anxieties about flying, and he's quite understanding and polite. We discuss the route we'll take, along with weather and turbulence forecasts. Next, I bring up a specific concern about today's flight. I guess it's one thing for short flights around the States, but for a flight like this far over water, do you take any special precautions? Yes, there are additional rules for extended overwater flights, which include the requirement to carry extra fuel. Also, the maintenance checks are more stringent, often requiring check flights before a plane is released. This aircraft is equipped with additional radios, including high-frequency transmitters, satellite communications, and GPS and Omega navigation. And we carry additional safety, survival, and medical equipment. These engines are held to an even higher degree of reliability than on domestic airplanes, he adds. Additional pilots work on some of the longer overwater flights, and flight plans are plotted with equal time points to inform us of the closest alternates. So as you can see, there are many specific procedures, precautions, and regulations that apply to this flight. The captain's confidence and professionalism is helpful in calming my anxieties. Did you know that driving to the airport today, you were 9,000 times more likely to be in an accident than you would be riding on an airliner? Someone recently did a study and found that statistically, you would have to fly every day for 22,000 years before being in a commercial airline accident. You see, throughout aviation, there are carefully designed layers of protection. That means that many things must go wrong in exactly the correct sequence to cause an accident. And fortunately, the safety statistics are getting better all the time. It's good to see that these guys are just as concerned about safety as I am. As this is the same airline that Dan works for as a mechanic, I ask, "Do you know Daniel Martin? He's a mechanic here." The captain replies, "Dan from the engine shop? Flies ultralights? I'm surprised he's not dead. Yeah, I've heard of that idiot. He's a worthless mechanic, violated consistently by the FAA, and the company's been trying to fire that moron for years. He's not a friend of yours, is he? My legs are suddenly cut out from under me. My world tumbles into a tailspin. So much of what I've learned and depended on has come from my friend Dan. How to fly and maintain my plane, and his telling me how safe airliners are. All that trust is now shattered. There's no way I can stay on this flight. How will I tell Jennifer I want off? The captain looks into my eyes and bursts out laughing. I'm joking. Dan's a great guy. I used to go fishing with him up to some nice spots that only he can get to in his little puddle jumper float plane. He's one hotshot mechanic, too. Now feeling somewhat foolish, I'm relieved and manage a little laughter, too. Just about then, the co-pilot returns to the cockpit from his outside pre-flight inspection of the airplane, and he runs through the before starting engines checklist. The pilots complete the checklist in a methodical and professional manner. A flight attendant then enters the cockpit to check if the pilots need anything to drink. The co-pilot overtly flirts with the young woman, almost on the verge of sexual harassment. She simply smiles sweetly and asks, "Hey, Bob, do you know a pilot's most reliable form of birth control?" The co-pilot bites. "No." "His personality." That's good for some more contagious laughter. I thank the pilots for their time and go back to find my seat next to Jennifer. While waiting for all the passengers to finish boarding, I begin to feel anxiety building when I think of the agent closing the door. But as I've learned, I use relaxation exercises to calm myself. First, I use the deep breathing method. Through my nose, I draw in slow, deep breaths, pushing my stomach outward. I hold it for a couple of seconds, and then quietly exhale through my mouth, whispering, "Relax." It's easy to forget just how powerful this relaxation tool of breathing is, and after a couple of repetitions, I can feel my stress disappear. Next, I use visualization, a technique which involves picturing a beautiful experience or setting. This is no problem for me, as I think back to my days up at Lake Monticello just a couple of months before. I imagine myself lying peacefully on my floats, bobbing in the middle of the serene lake. This keeps me occupied until all of the passengers are boarded and we prepare to depart. Dan explained how everything worked on these jets, so when it's time for engine start, I follow along with what's happening. At this point, conditioned air is being supplied by the APU, the Auxiliary Power Unit. The APU is a standby turbine-powered electrical generator, which also acts as an air conditioner. When the pilots start the engines, they shut off the flow of cool air for a minute. This airflow is used to spin the jet engines for starting. Once the engines are started, the cabin airflow resumes and is now supplied by the engines. After engines start, I can hear the roar as we power back from the gate. During powerbacks, the engines are placed in reverse thrust to move the plane backward. I look over at Jennifer as she reads her book with little interest in what's going on. While taxiing for takeoff, I hear noises coming from the hydraulics as the flaps are lowered and the pilots make a flight control check. I notice the wings bounce a little while taxiing. Dan told me this is okay because you want wings that give a smooth ride and flex but don't break. There's a short PA from the pilots and a ding to notify the flight attendants to get seated for takeoff. Our plane aligns on the runway and I hear the engine spool up as the pilots apply power for takeoff. Rolling along, I feel small bumps which are caused by the runway surface and the centerline lights. After a few moments, the nose of the plane tilts up and everything seems to get quieter and smoother as we lift off. I'm reassured to know from my own experience that the plane is happiest in the air. That's where it operates the best. On takeoff, I find myself enjoying the feel of the acceleration. These jet airliners have lots of power and can really move. Some people worry that an engine might quit, but as I learned from Dan, engine failures are extremely rare. He said not to worry because, as with everything else, the pilots are prepared. Engine failures are practiced routinely in training, and the drills are so demanding that if an engine does fail, it's easy to just circle around and land again. The FAA mandates that even with an engine out on the takeoff run, the plane must still be able to lift off, clear all obstacles by a wide margin, and comfortably return for landing. Each takeoff is planned so that if an engine fails, the pilots can either have plenty of room to stop or continue to take off safely. After takeoff, I hear the thump of the landing gear and the whine of the flaps retracting. I feel the plane settle a little because when the flaps are raised, it reduces lift and increases the plane's speed. From talks with Dan, I know to expect this. Next, I hear another ding and a short PA notifying the flight attendants it's safe to leave their seats. Armed with knowledge and guidance, my fears are slipping away. No endeavor in life is completely secure, but I'm feeling much safer. I've learned about flying and life from my new friends and from experiences on the ground and in the air. I'm happier and fulfilled, no longer dormant. There is no one answer in life, and there is no one destination to seek. To live, we must nourish our spirit and remember to try new things, because it's much more dangerous to just stand still. Don't run away from your nightmares. Run toward your dreams and attend to your passions. Looking out the window, I see the magnificent skyline of downtown San Francisco with the Golden Gate partially shrouded in fog. As we climb higher and higher, we encounter some bumps. Turbulence bothered me the most before, but again, knowledge is my savior. I've learned that it's normal to be concerned about turbulence. Many people are, but even strong turbulence is quite harmless. For the most part, flying is smooth. After all, we're riding on air. Almost magically, my anxieties fade. I think pleasant thoughts and concentrate on the now. I don't think so much about what might happen, but focus on what is happening. Jennifer looks up from her magazine and smiles at me for a moment before saying, "Mark, thank you so much for this trip. You'll see, you'll be fine, and we're going to have a great time." Her glowing face then shifts to an inquisitive look. "Are you sure Howie and the other birds will be okay while we're gone?" "They'll be fine, dear. Brad and Crystal are good kids. Isn't it funny how they think Howie's part cat? I bet they pamper those birds the whole time we're gone." "I suppose you're right," Jennifer says before returning her attention back to her magazine. A wave of grief flows up from my stomach and into my chest as I bite my lower lip to hold back the sting of tears. I gave our neighbor's kids careful instructions on taking care of our adopted parrots. Since Amelia's death late in the afternoon on the day we left for our trip to Lake Monticello, we'd grown quite fond of the creatures. It's comforting to have that little piece of her still with us, but I still miss her terribly. My last memory of her will always be of how tall and proud she stood while saluting our departure that morning. The authorities never located any relatives or next of kin, so Dan, Rich, and I handled her affairs. We looked into having her buried at Dreamland, but decided against it. I knew in my heart it would be better to scatter her ashes high in the sky above, where her soul always yearned to be. Swallowing hard, I return my thoughts to our vacation. I fumble through my small carry-on bag to retrieve our travel brochure. I settle back to read up a little more on our destination, Kauai, the Garden Island. Then out of nowhere, a new concern dominates my mind. I turn to Jennifer, startling her out of a mesmerized read, and frantically ask, "Honey, you did pack an umbrella, didn't you?"